Today on Field Notes, naturalist Lori Sanders takes a look at a rare sparrow which lives exclusively in salt marshes and whose presence tells us a lot about the health of that habitat.
To the casual observer, a sharp-tailed sparrow looks a lot like other sparrows, a small, buffy bird with brown streaking. But their appearance is about the only thing that's standard. Unlike most songbirds, sharp-tailed sparrows have almost no courtship. The males don't establish or guard territories, and the birds don't form monogamous pairs. Instead, the female chooses among singing males, mates with one or more of them, and then goes off on her own to build the nest, lay the eggs, and raise the young. And for sharp-tailed sparrows, all this activity happens only in salt marshes, a habitat which, in itself, is rare along the East Coast. Chris Elphick is a biologist at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. For the last 5 years, he and his team of graduate students have been studying sharp-tailed sparrows in more than 24 marshes along Long Island Sound. Of those marshes, this is one of the best.
This site, Hammonasset State Park, is probably one of the three most important sites in Connecticut, simply because it's a pretty big marsh. It has a fairly high proportion of what we refer to as high marsh, which is high enough that these guys don't get flooded out in except on extremely high tides.
On a large expanse of salt marsh like this, two of the qualities you notice are openness, it looks like a sea of grass, and its flatness. But look closer, and it becomes clear that it's not really flat. In a salt marsh, tiny changes in elevation, a centimeter or two, determine how often an area is flooded by the tide, and that in turn dramatically influences the types of plants. As we walk across, it's easy to see patterns, a jigsaw puzzle of slightly different greens. We've arrived during one of the highest tides, and even the so-called high marsh, which is actually just a couple centimeters higher than the surroundings, is flooded. Trina Bayard is a PhD student in Elphick's lab.
So we just had a bird flush up right over here. Oftentimes they'll nest in a spot with dead vegetation overhangings. Anywhere where the vegetation is thick, it's good places to look.
She leads us to a flooded section of high marsh, easily recognized by its darker green color. Hidden down in the dense vegetation is a sharp-tailed sparrow nest with three pale speckled eggs inside. Above the nest, like a thatched roof, is a mat of dried plant stems. These stems help camouflage the nest, and Elphick says they may also have another purpose.
A lot of females will build a kind of a woven dome over their nests, which we think helps them to keep their eggs in the nest when the nest floods, because the nest's only underwater for about an hour and a half during even a really high tide, which is long enough for the eggs to survive as long as they don't float out of the nest and get washed away.
But it's not a sure thing, which we can see at the next nest. It's totally underwater, and one egg is actually floating away. It's already about a foot from the nest.
This egg that's floating, it's got no chance of surviving. The one egg that's still in the nest could well survive after the water comes back down, if the female comes back and continues to incubate.
If is the key word. Often, a female will just decide to start over. That's not unusual, Elphick says. Lots of kinds of birds will re-nest if their first one gets destroyed or if their eggs or chicks get eaten or die. But that process usually takes a few days. The bird's hormone levels have to change, essentially be reset, before they begin mating and nesting behaviors again. Somehow, sharp-tailed sparrows, Elphick says, don't need that extra time.
In most tidal cycles, they've got about 26 days in which to produce eggs, which takes 3 or 4 days, then to incubate their eggs, which is another 10 or 12 days, and then to raise their young to where they can leave the nest, which is another 10 days. And you add it up, it's about 24, 25, 26 days, so it's really, really tight. And if they're going to make it, they have to be nesting immediately after they lose their first nest. And as long as they do that, they seem to do okay.
As problematic as regular flooding sounds, tidal cycles, including extremely high tides, are something sharp-tailed sparrows have evolved to cope with. More difficult, Elphick says, are the challenges they face because of habitat loss. During the last few hundred years, salt marshes have been drained and filled, and they've also been damaged because roads were built across them. In Connecticut, tidal flows have been partially or fully restored to many salt marshes, but according to Elphick, habitat quality is still a serious issue.
The quality of the habitat is probably the biggest current concern, especially with the spread of invasive plants, particularly Phragmites, a common reed, into marshes. And where the Phragmites spreads in, when you get really dense, tall stands of it, it makes the habitat unsuitable for these birds, and you simply don't find them.
And trumping these problems are climate models that predict a sea level rise of about half a meter within the next 100 years.
If sea level rise continues in the way that is predicted, that alone could be all that it takes to push these guys to the point where it's simply not possible for them to reproduce. And if that happens, there may be some threshold point not very far in the future at which the population will just crash.
Biologists estimate that nearly half of the world's population of sharp-tailed sparrows breeds in the salt marshes of southern New England. But because of habitat loss, this species is already endangered. Elphick says the continued persistence of this rare bird will be a clear indicator of the health of this narrow band of shoreline habitat. For Field Notes, I'm Laurie Sanders.
Funding for this segment of Field Notes was made possible by the Long Island Sound Futures Fund, ensuring the future of the sound through education, research, and wise stewardship. On the web at www.longislandsoundstudy.net.